This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Well, good morning. Good Thursday to you. It is a throwback Thursday here on Sports Map Radio. Got a jam-packed hour for you. Larry Lage going to join us. Associated Press. Big Ten tournament going on in Chicago. We'll talk to him about Purdue. We'll talk to him about Michigan. We'll talk to him about Wisconsin losing and the future of the Badgers program. A whole bunch of things at the Big Ten tournament. But we're also going to get to the Phoenix Suns as Kevin Durant slipped and fell. The blow that could be to the Phoenix Suns en route to the playoffs coming up in April. The Jets took that plane to California earlier this week, and there's a lot more to dissect on that because it looks like now Woody Johnson is saying, look, I need a quarterback, and that's it. I don't care what happens. Get this guy. Let's make it happen. I'm tired of rookies. I'm tired of the future. I need a guy right now. But we're going to start the hour with the news from yesterday's ACC tournament. And it's not anything to do with the game. It is not anything to do with the outcome. And it is not anything to do with a player. It is everything to do with Jim Boeheim. And Jim Boeheim is now out at Syracuse as the head coach. Did he retire or was he let go? It's a very, very confusing story. Because Jim Boeheim said afterwards in a press conference that he had given a retirement speech earlier, but nobody caught on. And then he was asked about his future at Syracuse, and he put it in the hands of the administration. And a few hours later, the administration came out and said that Jim Boeheim is now out as head coach at Syracuse and that Adrian Autry, who played at Syracuse in the early 90s, will now be taking over as head coach. This is the end of an era, however you want that era to look. This is 47 years at one school. This is similar when we talked about Mike Krzyzewski leaving Duke. There is two generations that saw Jim Boeheim as the head coach at Syracuse. And people thought it would continue. I have no idea if Jim Boeheim, if this is a willing move for Boeheim to be done with basketball and be done with his alma mater, a place that he has lived and loved his entire life. Or was he forced out in an effort for the school to say, we just cannot keep doing this. Syracuse has been pretty much irrelevant for the past couple of years. They had a beautiful run to the Final Four in 2016. But other than that, find me an outstanding season in the past 5, 6, 7, 8 years that was the regular season combined with an NCAA tournament run. He uses that zone defense, and he uses it well, and it's been one of the tricky things and what makes Syracuse so threatening in a one-game tournament. But in the end, he has not had the kind of seasons that the expectations are at Syracuse. But here's the other problem, is that Boeheim is at 47 years old, and we talked about this with Roy Williams, and we talked about this with Mike Krzyzewski, and we talked about this with Jay Wright. There's a new way of doing business in college athletics. And I don't know how much you'd want to change your stripes when you're 78 years old. And Jim Boeheim is 78 years old. Now, I'm not saying that's the reason that Jim Boeheim might have said, yeah, you know what, maybe I am done with this. I coached my sons. Both of them are gone. I've done this for 47 years. The end was coming at some point, and now I know that the end is coming now. And it's probably best. I don't like this NIL. He said that. He doesn't like the transfer portal. He said that. He's an old guard in a new sport, and the new sport isn't basketball. The new sport is the business of basketball. And you need people who understand this, and unfortunately, you need people to embrace it. Yesterday, we were talking about Clemson and the good, the bad, and the dumb, and how the Clemson Tigers are putting together video centers and podcast centers and things to make it easier for students to access the tools they need to enhance NIL. And this is the direction that they're going. And a lot of schools are going to do it too. LSU has a program to help students negotiate contracts with NIL. Now, remember, the schools don't pay these kids. Companies pay these kids. And some of them are 18, 19 years old, and they don't really know the first time they've ever seen a legal contract. Jim Boeheim is from a school, old school mentality that he's the coach, he's the boss, he's the king. And that's it. And when you play for him, that's the way it is. Now, again, I'm not reading into anything here, but it's not would not be surprising if guys like Krzyzewski and Roy Williams and even Jay Wright to some extent just went, you know, I'd rather not. Mike Bray at Notre Dame just went, you know what, I'd rather not. There's some opportunities to do some other things. This is a really, really tough world. I'm tired of answering the fan bases as to why we couldn't land that kid when everything had to do with portal and transfers and NIL and all of those things. It's a world now that is being shaped by the student athlete. And it is a long time coming. And I hate to say this, and I hate to be sort of the one, you know, the court jester over here with the clown makeup on, kind of making fun of the Kings. But here's the reality. No, you all those coaches that are bemoaning the good old days, you have nobody to blame but yourself. The entire NCAA has nobody to blame but themselves. This should have never gone to the Supreme Court. It went to the Supreme Court. You could have worked out deals. You could have shared the pie. You could have made it so that in the end, student athletes were taken care of in some way. But you forced their hand, and they got the right representation. And when that finally was a ruling on the Supreme Court, your world came shattering. Now let's get to Boeheim for a second here. I am not certain that that's the main reason why he is done with Syracuse and done with college basketball. It may be that the school is done with Jim Boeheim and college basketball. And if that's the case, it probably has to do with his record, and it probably has to do with an idea that the sport is going in another direction and he's not really wanting to follow suit. But the other thing is that 47 years is a tremendous long time for anybody to have one position and never have it be challenged by authority. When you're the king of your area, it is hard to take the king down. And you need somebody to go, hey, you know what? Is everybody okay with this? Right? Mike Krzyzewski was able to walk out on his own. He wasn't forced out of Duke. Why would you force him out of Duke? He was having success. But he was able to do the nostalgic tour. There were moments at every stop in the ACC where it was going to be his final stop at Virginia, his final stop in North Carolina, his final stop at Georgia Tech even, right? Clemson, the ACC schools. Everybody recognized in whatever way they wanted to recognize it that Mike Krzyzewski was done at Duke and he had been coming to this school forever and ever and ever, bringing his Blue Devils here. And maybe your school had one or two moments where you beat Duke and ran the court and had a great night in 97 or whatever it was. But that was the nostalgic tour that Jim Boeheim never got. Because one, it's relatively new being in the ACC, and he wasn't playing the Big East teams anymore except the occasional Georgetown game that they had before their conference schedule started. So no, he didn't get to do the nostalgic tour. He basically was asked, he gave it to the administration. The administration said, yeah, he's done. Will we ever find out if it was mutual or not? I don't know. Maybe Jim Boeheim comes out and says, yeah, it was mutual. I let them do it. Or maybe we find out later on that the administration made a decision on him. But there's one thing you can say about Jim Boeheim, and over the years he got a little grouchy, he got a little old, he got a little get off my lawn, is the best way you could put it. But I know no other coach at Syracuse my entire life, right? As a kid growing up and just finding my way around the sports world and getting interested in college basketball, Jim Boeheim has been the coach at Syracuse. And I didn't live too far from Syracuse, as I was in New Hampshire and he was in Western New York. We're kind of in the same region. And I watched Big East Monday when I was a kid, and I loved the colorful characters of the Big East. Lou Carnesecca's sweaters, Big John Thompson, Lawley Massimino, Jim Calhoun, Rick Pitino, the young gun at Providence. I loved them all. They were fun. And Pearl Washington and Patrick Ewing and all of the great players of that conference, right? Chris Mullen, Ed Pinckney, Gary McLean, all of those players. The 1985 Villanova basketball team played in the Final Four where there were three Big East teams. They beat Georgetown, playing them for the third time that season. Right, I remember being a kid in high school. I was like in ninth grade, I think, or maybe even eighth grade. And I remember saying to the older kids that Villanova was going to win for no other reason than I heard it on the radio that Villanova had played Georgetown tough, and I took a shot. And I was right. I bragged about it, and I felt very Nostradamus-like because I felt like I had like some sort of insight, and I didn't really have any insight. But I loved Big East basketball. I loved it. I had a Syracuse sweatshirt. I wanted to go to Syracuse. My brother rooted for Georgetown. We loved Big East basketball, and Jim Boeheim is the only coach I've ever known there. They built a dome for him, 30,000 people, would come out to see Syracuse play. Some of the greats played at Syracuse. Carmelo Anthony helped him win the championship that he finally got. He'd been to five Final Fours. Heartbreaking loss to Indiana in 1987. He lost to a Rhode Island team in the tournament that is best remembered because one of the players on the Rhode Island Rams, his father was blind. His brother would sit next to his father and do the play-by-play. And he lost to that team. He had great basketball teams that didn't go far in the NCAA tournament, and he had teams that were put together by Band-Aid and string and putty, and he got them to the Final Four. You know, I look at Jim Boeheim and I say, you know what? Yeah, over the years, he got really grouchy. I'll admit. He got angry with reporters. He would snap at reporters. He got old and he got grouchy. But I also think about it. If you win 1,000 games and you coach close to, you know, 1,600 of them over 47 years, how many words has Jim Boeheim uttered into a microphone or a camera? Well, if you're muttering into a camera, you're muttering into a microphone anyway. So how many words did Jim Boeheim mutter into a microphone? 2 million? How many? And they're not all going to come out great. But I don't know this story. We don't know if it was a gracious exit or a man that just went, all right, you know what? I leave it on the table to you, the bosses. And they went, yeah, you know, it's time for a new voice. Because sometimes it is time for a new voice. You can't be king forever. You know, that we all know. We'll talk more about this story as we continue, but it is a Throwback Thursday, and we'll tell you what year and why we've chosen it. Coming up next, it's Wake Up Call.
This is how we do it.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. It is Wake Up Call on SportsMap Radio, and this is 1995 on this Throwback Thursday on this date. The Arizona Diamondbacks and the Tampa Bay Rays were announced as expansion teams for Major League Baseball. So congratulations to those two cities. What an unbelievable moment that was, because those were two cities that were talked about the most as cities that would get a Major League Baseball team. Tampa had this place, it still exists, Tropicana Field, but it's where the Lightning played before their building was built in Tampa. And Tropicana Field is in St. Petersburg, and it was just there. And the San Francisco Giants threatened to move there one time. There was a whole bunch of teams that went, oh, well, we could move to Tampa St. Pete. And so Tampa St. Pete was like, yeah, we got a place if anybody wants to come and be part of, come over here. And finally, baseball went, yeah, you know what? We'll give it an expansion team. And Phoenix was just booming too much not to have a baseball team. It was booming too much. So it was funny because Arizona, Phoenix, remember when Jerry Colangelo, we probably don't remember because it was in the 70s. But Jerry Colangelo, when he put the Suns there, it was just the city in the desert. You know, it didn't have much going on, you know, whatnot. And then all of a sudden, here come the St. Louis Cardinals. Right, the hockey expands there. The Winnipeg Jets moved down there and it became the Arizona Coyotes. And then they finally got a baseball team. And that baseball team, both teams started in 1998. And then the Diamondbacks won the World Series in 2001. Yep. So they gave the city the franchise. I have a special bond with both of them in that I attended a game in you remember the old Bob? It's Chaseville now. It was called Bank One Ballpark.
Yeah.
I attended a game at Bank One Ballpark and Tropicana Field in their inaugural season.
Nice.
Yeah.
Did you go in the pool?
I did not go in the pool. Mm. So I went. My wife is from St. Petersburg. So when we got married, we went on our honeymoon. But before we came back home from our honeymoon, before we left, we went to a Rays game. In their inaugural season. And then I was working in Las Vegas. We flew out to Las Vegas where we were going to live. And I was working for a station, and we were a Diamondbacks affiliate. And like all affiliates, they have like affiliate night or thing, you know, little things like that we could.
Right.
And we did an affiliate night where we gave away, you know, tickets and said, if you want to go to Arizona for the weekend, here it is. And we set up shop with some t-shirts and stuff, but we went down to Arizona in August of that year and saw a Diamondbacks game. So I saw both of the teams in their inaugural season. And the Rays have turned into a good franchise that manages their money very well and is very, very competitive. Although it's very, I don't want to say controversial, that's too strong of a word, but there's a lot of talk like you're not making it. Like the attendance is down. St. Petersburg is not the best place to play. You should play in Tampa. There needs to be a ballpark in Tampa. You know, my wife's from there, so I used to talk to people about this, and there was this old, I think you and I talked about this before with Pat Donovan, is that people in St. Petersburg will cross the bridge to Tampa, but people in Tampa won't cross the bridge to St. Petersburg.
Too far of a drive, man.
Yeah, I know, it's crazy. But if you live in St. Petersburg, you'll cross the bridge to see the Lightning or the Buccaneers, but if you live in Tampa, it's like, St. Pete ain't going there. You know, so that's why they can't, it's a city. It's two cities separated by water, and it's like, I don't know. I go down there, go to a baseball game. So congratulations to both of those franchises on a throwback Thursday. So again, we're talking about Jim Boeheim and his retirement. Weird. It was weird yesterday. It really was. I think if you're at a place for 40-something years, and I think if you're been a head coach at a place for a very, very long time, I think it's very easy to get not only comfortable, but uber comfortable. And I think it's easy to have this disbelief that your exit will be entirely on you. Like, you've built up so much goodwill that there is absolutely no way you're going to get fired.
The whole job for life.
Right, exactly. Like, and it's easy to believe that. Right. You've survived other lulls. You've survived this president, that athletic director. You've survived them all. Right. And it's easy to go, and I'll survive them. I will dictate the terms. I won a national championship. I fill this dome. I've brought in some of the high talent players. All of those things. You could build this idea that you're immune to being fired. You've been there so long. How dare no one would want to be the guy that fires you. That's what you can build yourself up as. But this is a strange exit because it doesn't feel like Boeheim did it ceremoniously. It feels like the school let him go, but we don't know for sure if the school let him go. We got this weird press release from the school. Boeheim was not, he's kind of vague about it. But maybe that's exactly the way he wanted it. Maybe he didn't want a ceremonial exit. Maybe he didn't want to wax poetically about his career. Maybe he didn't want to relive the memories. Maybe he didn't want to, you know, come to tears about coaching his sons and coaching some of the players that passed away while he was. I mean, he saw the development of young men in his program. He had been there so long that he watched the development of players come and go and get and become older men and die. Like, he has some of his players pass away on him. And maybe he didn't want to get to a moment where he was thinking about all of that right after they lost to a dagger three-pointer with a half a second remaining. And maybe he didn't want any of that. That's all possible. So, but it was just, it's unceremonious, and it feels like it should have gone better for him. Look, I love something in your life. Like, he loves Syracuse. That man loves that location. Think about Syracuse, New York. Okay, look, I have a lot of respect for Western New Yorkers.
Yeah.
Because I grew up in New Hampshire, and I know what it's like to have feet of snow land on your house. I know what it's like to have your father snowblow a driveway and have it as tall as a mountain when you're a little kid. Western New York is worse than that.
Yep.
And he stayed the entire time. He's been there. He grew up in that area. He went to school at Syracuse. He took a job as a golf coach, an unpaid basketball coach, for $2,000 when he graduated. He did. He played, like, I think he worked with a minor league team or played minor league basketball or something, but nevertheless came back to Syracuse, was assistant coach, basketball coach, and in 1976 took over the program, and he's been there ever since. He's never wanted to go anywhere. He's been toyed about by, hey, you want to go to the NBA? You want to go to Ohio State? I remember in the 80s he was Ohio State. All of this, all of the times he had a chance to go. And think about this, too. Think about everywhere he's taken that team, right? So all of the airline flights that they've gone to for conference, you know, for conference games, for non-conference tournaments, right? I mean, he's taken them to over, you know, he's taken them overseas on trips. He's taken them to warm places in America and these little Maui invitationals and places like that. Do you ever think like at some point where he goes, you know what? I'm getting too old to shovel 5 feet of snow, or I'm getting too old to be trudging through snow in winter. I think Arizona State seems like a nice place me and my wife could be. I think Los Angeles, California, at Pauley Pavilion could be a nice place for our family to grow. I think, pick some other place, San Diego. I don't know, any place that's warm and comfortable. And no interest. He loved Syracuse. He loved living there. He loved working there. I was restless when I was younger. I'll admit this. I know I have a bunch of radio friends that I worked with in my first radio job in Manchester, New Hampshire, that still live in New Hampshire. I've lived everywhere. I've lived in Vegas. I did 1 year in Charleston, South Carolina, Denver, Colorado Springs, back to Denver, Nashville. We lived in New Jersey for 2 years for my wife's job, back to Nashville. I mean, I've lived everywhere. St. Petersburg. I did a little thing in West Palm Beach to help an expansion basketball team. I've been everywhere. I have friends who've lived in the same spot their whole life. I have high school friends that grew up in our little town and still live in our little town, and it works for them. I have a lot of respect for people like that, and I can't imagine the love you must have for a place if you are at one place for 47 years. That you never like got frustrated where you went, you know what, it would be better somewhere else. The grass is greener somewhere else. Never thought that. He never thought that. He could fight administrators, but he knew that he would be able to stand tall. So I don't know. It just felt like for a guy that's given the school that much, a press release, they're not on the same page. Like, is he so stubborn that the school couldn't go up to him and say, look, Jim, here's what we're going to do. You're done, but we can do this a couple of ways here. You can retire. Save face and retire. All right? We will be more than happy to do that, but we're firing you. So it's either one or the other. And if that's the story, if he didn't retire and he got fired, this is the way you do it. You put him out there in a post-game press conference, let him squirm a little bit with some answers that are rather non-committal, and then you release a press release, and then you go on to Adrian Autry. All right, coming up next, so the Jets went to California. Now they really got to get Aaron Rodgers, right? Well, we'll talk about that next.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Oh, a little Hootie and the Blowfish.
A little Hootie in the morning.
This is Columbia, South Carolina's finest Hootie and the Blowfish.
Staple of 1995.
I did. I saw them in college when they were a bar band. I did not know who they were. We were just two, my buddies, we went into a bar and saw Hootie and the Blowfish because they were playing Columbia. And then years later, I was working in a radio station, and their promotional album was given to our music director. And I remember seeing it going, oh, that's Hootie and the Blowfish from Columbia, South Carolina. And she told me, yeah, they're getting pretty big now. So, yeah. Darius Rucker. He's a huge Columbia. He's a huge Gamecock fan. So he's now a country singer.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken. I kind of lost track of him. But that's kind of bold, right? To be,
I think it's kind of like,
leave Hootie and the Blowfish to go on your own and become a country singer.
Yeah, but I think it's kind of like a, you know, not to compare apples to, you know, watermelons or basketballs or whatever.
Yeah.
It's kind of like Taylor Swift in a way, where I think Hootie can go, or Darius Rucker can go back and forth between doing country and doing pop.
Yeah, that's true.
Which is kind of what Taylor Swift does, where she started off as a country singer, but now she's more pop, but she can go back and forth.
How often do these bands, and I don't know if it happened to Hootie and the Blowfish, where there's a manager or music people that kind of go, come here. You're way better than everybody in this band.
And then they go, you're the talent.
Yeah, you're the straw that stirs the drink, man. You need to, why are you splitting revenue with these guys? You could go on your own. You could do your own thing. And then you go, oh, no, I'll never leave my friends. But then over the years, you go, yeah, I think I got to go see, to do this.
It's run its course.
It's run its course, yeah.
So I wonder how often that happens, right? Where you go, yeah, you got it all. You're riding everything. It's all you. It's all you. So nevertheless, Hootie and the Blowfish. 1995, the Diamondbacks and the Tampa Bay Rays announced as expansion teams. The Athletic, if you subscribe to The Athletic, did a thing this offseason where they previewed future expansion cities for Major League Baseball. Is that a real story, do you think, or do you think people are hoping? I never hear baseball saying we're actively pursuing expansion cities, and yet there's a committee in Nashville, and I'm like, well, who told you there's going to be a team here?
Again, what's weird with baseball is that they are such traditionalists that it almost seems like it's impossible to create a baseball team.
Right. Yeah.
But it really is probably the cheapest of all the sports to create. Maybe basketball is probably a little bit more inexpensive.
They've done Portland, Nashville, Charlotte, even Montreal. Returning to Montreal, they did an article about that. They've gone down this road of
Salt Lake City. I've heard.
Following city after city, who have built little. Like here in Nashville, there's a baseball committee. There's a professional baseball committee. They've got a few people on it, and I think Don Mattingly's even on it. That are actively pursuing Nashville as a baseball city. But I've never heard Rob Manfred ever go, yeah, we're looking. Yeah, we're definitely talking to cities.
I'm surprised that, you know, these cities don't have them.
Yeah.
You know, like in this day and age, it surprises me that, you know, you have this professional sport that is struggling for fans. You know, they're struggling to get that fandom, and they're doing a whole bunch of things to change the game for the better. Except for the extra large bases thing. That's stupid. But why not, you know, get into some of these markets where there's not many sports going on? I mean, Nashville's a perfect place. Charlotte, I think, would be a perfect place.
I think Charlotte's a great place. I think Charlotte's a really good place. I would love to see a team here in Nashville. I really would. I know it's an extremely wealthy city. It's got a lot of money. But it's like 4 hours to St. Louis. It's 4 hours to Atlanta. Mm-hmm. It might be 3+ to Cincinnati. I mean, you can't go to a baseball game here in Nashville, like on a reasonable drive.
Yeah.
I know people who go to Memphis, which is about 3 hours, depending on which highway you take, counting how you get there. It's about a little bit of 3 hours to Memphis. I've known people to go boogie to Memphis for an NBA game on a weekend and come back, and they get back really late. I've known people to do that. They go to Knoxville all the time and come back. For football games, and that's a couple of hours away.
Well, that's different.
But I don't know anybody. Yeah,
that's religious.
I know, that's different. That's a religion. But I've never met anybody who goes, no, I went down to the Braves game and came back. Like, it's too far. It's really over the mountain and down through Chattanooga.
It's too far. If you do that, you're spending the night, right?
Yeah, you're spending the night. You're making it a full weekend. So it's not like. It's not like other places where you might plant a team and be in somebody's real territory.
That's what I'm saying. Like a place like Charlotte, you know, putting a team in North Carolina. I mean, we know that they have a rich history in minor league ball.
They sure do.
Sure do. And they would probably have instant fandom.
Yeah. So I don't know if baseball is even planning this, but 1995 is when these two cities were being announced, and they joined Major League Baseball in 1998.
Both have been to World Series. Like you said, Diamondbacks won. There's still six teams that haven't won a World Series.
Yeah. The Diamondbacks were great. They were lousy that first year, right?
Yeah.
I think they lost 100 games, whatever it was. But then, like, the next year, they were like Curt Schilling and Randy Johnson.
Let's go year two.
Right? Like, they didn't mess around. They weren't like, hey, we're going to just ride the goodwill of the people of Phoenix. They'll just buy our tickets because it's baseball in the desert. No problem. They went, nope, we're getting two of the stars and we're getting them to play here. And that was the appeal. People were really concerned in the 90s about the Diamondbacks because they were looking and saying, well, most of these guys have houses in the Phoenix, Scottsdale area anyway. That's where they were living in the offseason. Right? And so they were like, why wouldn't they play for Arizona? There was this thought that the Diamondbacks would just get all the free agents. Everybody would want to play there because they would be able to take their kids to school, and then they would be able to just boogie down to Bank One Ballpark for the game. So, but, you know, in the end, money does trump a lot of things. And so, you know, teams were able to go, yeah, chill. It's okay. San Diego is a nice place to live, too, and L.A. is a nice place to live, too, and people don't mind living in Seattle and other places. We'll be fine. So, nevertheless, that's our Throwback Thursday today. All right, so the Jets. So the Jets went out to visit Aaron Rodgers earlier this week, talked about that yesterday. And now you could see the narrative switching that the Jets are now quote, on the clock to get Aaron Rodgers. Problem is, there's no clock to get. But there's going to be now intense pressure on the Jets to land Aaron Rodgers. But they don't control this. But the reason it is because Woody Johnson has had enough. Woody Johnson is the owner of the Jets. He has watched countless quarterbacks in his tenure come and go and fail to get that team to the Super Bowl. All the young promise of rookies in the draft have failed to deliver, and now he wants a big-time quarterback. That is what he wants. He's not interested in more development for Zach Wilson. He's not interested in finding another quarterback in free agency that's, you know, just a journeyman guy that will be all right. He wants star. He wants power. He wants a quarterback that automatically takes that team and puts him in that upper echelon of the AFC. But as we know, the Green Bay Packers run this and a little bit of Aaron Rodgers too. The Packers may want to move on with Aaron Rodgers. I think they do because they agreed to allow Rodgers to talk to the Jets. If you are hellbent on making sure that Aaron Rodgers does two things, either retires or plays for you, you don't allow any team to go talk to him. But the Packers allowed this to happen. They control this. It would have been tampering if it was not done through the proper channels, and it was done through the proper channels.
This is crazy.
It is crazy.
And this is one of the most bizarre NFL stories I think we've had in years. And this is way different than, you know, Brett Favre retiring, unretiring, then going off to the Jets. I don't think I've ever seen anything. I don't think we've ever had anything like this.
Well, it's interesting because it's like a poker game, and the Jets have decided to play the poker game by just just showing their cards as the dealer is playing them out, right? Like the Packers are holding theirs. Aaron Rodgers is old, and the Jets are like, "Yep, we've got ace and eight, and let's see how this plays out." So they're like, "Oh, you can hide those," and like, "Nope, nope, nope, nope. You can see what we're doing, right?" And
it's like they're all in, but not really,
not really, right? So this is the Jets are the only part of this three way battle here, this three way conversation that knows exactly what they want out of this. The Packers, they're quiet as a mouse. Do they want Aaron Rodgers to play in 2023? Yeah, I guess they do.
Yeah, we have no clue.
Do they want Jordan Love to play in 2023? Yeah, I guess they do. Do they care if Aaron Rodgers retires? Yeah, I guess they do. Do they want to trade him to somewhere? Yeah, I guess they do. We have no idea, right? Aaron Rodgers, does he want to play for the Packers in 2023? It's $60 million. I guess.
I would.
Does he want to retire and be done with NFL football? I don't know. Seems like a guy that has a lot of interest in other things. Does he want to go to New York and play for the Jets? I don't know. Like, there's nobody is really clear. They're all playing against each other, but the one group that's not playing against anybody is the Jets. The Jets are like, "We'll trade for you. We'll pay you. We want you here. We're not playing around. We don't like any quarterback that we have on the roster." Like that. Let's just make this clear. Mike White, Zach Wilson, Joe Flacco. No, none of them. None of them. We want you and only you.
Luke Falk is still on the roster, right?
Is he? I hope so, because he's in that group too. What a mess. Absolute mess. All right. Big Ten basketball tournament in Chicago, Illinois. Larry Lage will join us from the Associated Press to talk about the teams and how deep that conference is as we get closer to Selection Sunday. It's Wake Up Call.
Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, well, the Big Ten tournament going on in Chicago, Illinois, as we continue our conference previews, gearing up towards Selection Sunday. So the Big Ten this year dominated by Purdue. Well, not really dominated by Purdue, but Purdue was in the top five and number one in the country most of the season. Went 26-5, so that's as good of a domination as you can have for a regular season. But 15-5 in conference play and only a few games above Indiana and Northwestern and Michigan State on top of that conference. But Zach Edey, of course, is one of the players of the year. But Indiana's a strong basketball team. Northwestern has played pretty well. But then you get to the middle, and that's kind of where I like going with these conferences. conference tournaments is I think there's an appeal to these things. As I've been saying all week, I think when you get to the NCAA tournament and you play a team that you've never seen before, you certainly haven't played them during the regular season, maybe you haven't played them in 25 years, right? But in the conference tournaments, you're playing familiar foes. You're playing teams that you're preparing for week in and week out, the same kind of teams. You're knowing what's going on in your conference. You know the trends of your conference. You know how different injuries are affecting. So when you get to this and there's a little bit of desperation, if you mix in a little bit of desperation with familiarity, that's why I think these are really, really special weeks for college basketball. And the Big Ten going on in Chicago, Illinois. Larry Leach joins us from the Associated Press on the Big Ten. How are you, Larry?
I'm great. How are you?
Thanks for joining us to help us preview this conference, which is underway. I know a couple of games are already in the books, but let's start at the top. Let's start about Purdue and Zach Edey and this Boilermaker team. They've been number one in the nation. They've been in the top three for most of the year. This Boilermaker team, does it go anything else outside of the big man?
Ask me that again, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, is there anything else other than the big man for the Boilermakers? What else do they do?
Well, they have a really dynamic freshman backcourt that has been really good. But guard play is so huge in basketball in general, but in particular in postseason play. And I think that might be the thing that slows the Boilermakers down a little bit. But Zach Edey has had an outstanding season. You could argue he's the best player in the conference and the most improved. He's gotten great shape, added some different moves, a left-handed shot. I think the world of him as a player, and I think Matt Painter is a great coach as well.
Let's talk about some of the teams in the middle. We've been kind of buzzing about this with conference tournaments. You add a little desperation, you can get some really cool things. Who's desperate in this tournament, and who is built well enough in that desperation to make some noise in this tournament in Chicago?
I think Michigan is desperate. I think Michigan comes into this game needing to win two games, or three, to get in the tournament. And that second game, if they can get past Rutgers, which will be a tough game, probably the best game today, Rutgers-Michigan, to be a really intriguing matchup. I think Michigan gets past them, as in Rutgers, and then faces Purdue and probably loses. I think Michigan needs to win that second game against Purdue to get in, to get to 19 wins with a really uneven resume in what has been a rough season at Michigan. When you have Hunter Dickinson and Jet Howard, son of Coach Juwan Howard, and some other parts, they've crumbled in a lot of late games, and that's led to a lackluster record. So I think Michigan goes into this tournament desperate and needing to win two games. And again, that second game would be over top-seeded Purdue to extend Juwan Howard's really solid run in the NCAA tournament. He's been the most successful Big Ten coach over the last couple of years, but he and the Wolverines definitely are in jeopardy of not making the NCAA tournament.
This is one of those conferences that can be very, very deep come Selection Sunday. How deep is the 2023 version of the Big Ten?
You know, I think they get to 7-8 or so. I think this season has been marked by remarkable parity and depth of field, if you will. I think you can go 12 deep or so in this conference with teams that can beat you on any given night. And now at the bottom, I'm talking about you, Ohio State, a really dangerous team potentially. But I think 7 or 8 teams get in. And unfortunately for the Big Ten and its fans, I think the 23-year drought of this conference not winning a championship continues. Big Ten has not won an NCAA tournament since 2000.
Wow, when I worked Indiana, for the right?
State.
Maryland.
I was a beat writer for the Lansing State Journal in 2000, the last time the Big Ten won a tournament. It was in 2000 with Michigan State. I think that drought continues. I don't think this is a really strong year for the Big Ten in terms of the top. Purdue potentially is the best team, but they've had an uneven end of this season. I think Indiana is really intriguing, especially with Trace Jackson Davis, but the Hoosiers too have been lacking consistency, like all these teams. And yet, maybe if you look around college basketball, you could argue other teams are like that too. I I watch Big Ten teams and cover them in person more than I do other conferences, of course. So I'm sure there's warts elsewhere in the country. But I think it's a really – it sets up for a really fun Big Ten tournament. But then I don't think it'll be so fun for the Big Ten and their fans once we get past the first weekend in the NCAA tournament.
Were teams like Rutgers and Northwestern, were they surprises this year? What were they building? I know Northwestern had a run a couple of years ago and got a lot of national attention. Was that a surprise this season? Was Rutgers as well?
I think Northwestern was, and you see that reflected in Chris Collins being named the Coach of the Year.
Yeah.
Rutgers has been solid. I don't think what Rutgers has done has surprised people who have paid attention to Big Ten basketball in recent years. They really have something going pretty solid there. And when you think about Big Ten expansion, you know, it certainly has not worked out for Nebraska in football or basketball. And Maryland has not worked out really in either sport as well. And Rutgers now is the first kind of newer Big Ten team that is breaking through in one of the top two sports, and that's basketball. They're going to punch you in the mouth, and they're going to keep punching. Probably the hardest playing Big Ten team. And again, that matchup with Michigan, which is not necessarily a physical team and arguably not mentally strong, that is the game to watch today, Rutgers and Michigan.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, so Northwestern is a surprise, Rutgers is not.
Give me an insight on Illinois. I always feel this team is like bubbling with really with greatness, but it's not quite there. And I like Brad Underwood a lot, but what are the Fighting Illini? How would you best characterize them?
I think they are like Brad Underwood. You look at him, he looks like a tough guy. He sounds like a tough guy. Yeah. And when Illinois plays tough, they're pretty good. And when they don't, they're not. They just don't have, you know, that star power anywhere. Terrence Shannon is an exception. He's their best player, an all Big Ten player. But, you know, not a lot of eye-popping talent there. And they start off with Penn State, which is a sneaky good team. But I think Illinois gets past Penn State. I think they also beat Northwestern in the next step. And I'll just answer your question because I was coming on your show. I figured I might as well break it all down. I got Indiana and Illinois, Purdue and Michigan State, and Michigan State beating Indiana to earn an automatic bid to extend what has been quite a run for Tom Izzo and the Spartans, dating all the way back to the late 1990s.
No doubt.
Backcourt play is everything in postseason play, and Tyson Walker and A.J. Hogard and Jaden Akins, really a three-guard backcourt, I think give Michigan State a chance to make a run. A lot of Michigan State fans will be in Chicago. It's a big town for Spartans, and that's my pick if I had to make one. I certainly am not advocating anybody make any bets on my behalf because I don't do this for a living. But I'm really looking forward to it. I'm actually going to be there Friday for all four games. I have not been to the Big Ten tournament in person since 2000 when I covered Michigan State for Lansing State Journal. So I'm really looking forward to that and helping out our writers, Andy Seligman and Jay Cohen, who are going to be writing the game stories. And I'll be, you know, feeding them quotes and hoping to catch up with Kevin Warren on his way out the door to run the Chicago Bears. I've known him for 20 plus years when he worked for the Lions. So looking forward to catching up with him as well.
Larry, that's great stuff, my friend. Thank you. So, I know you're right. Tom Izzo in the tournament, man. You never know, man. That guy knows how to coach these one-game situations. Appreciate it, Larry. Thank you so much.
Yeah, and I will point out real quick, though, he has not made it out of the first weekend in the NCAA tournament in a while.
His best year was
the COVID year. So he's once he gets in, he's going to be really desperate to advance for like he used to.
No doubt. All right, Larry, great stuff. Appreciate it, my friend. Enjoy the tournament, my friend, on Friday.
Bye-bye.
You got it. Larry Lage, Associated Press, joining us here on Sports Map Radio on the Big Ten Tournament. Yes, it is Purdue. Indiana is a very good team as well. A couple of other teams that are desperate, including, again, what Juwan Howard and Michigan have in that middle of that pack. But, Iowa's a pretty good team, too. They can score a lot of points. But, yeah, look out for Michigan State as well.